dynamique. This is a project, I think, that's very important. It has tried to create an informational basis for social movement critiques around social and economic injustice. For example, issues around economic inequality, issues around the Quebec government giving tax breaks to major companies, and sort of the growing inequalities in Quebec society, which I think is more broadly reflected in Canada and also internationally. I think a project like IRIS, the Institut de Recherche et des Informations Socio-Économiques, is important because it points to having informational tools that describe neoliberal economic reality in Quebec and in Canada and beyond that is embodied by growing inequality locally and globally. And I think it was really important to hear Guillaume's reflections about rising populist right politics and the ways that these inequalities are played on by politicians like Pierre Poilievre or François Legault in this context, who often name problems, speak about issues, but in fact don't propose any meaningful solutions while actually digging in deeper to the same economic framework of neoliberalism with lineage back to economists like the right-wing Milton Friedman and, you know, politicians like Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, which have really created the framework of economic inequality that has just deepened and hollowed out a lot of the public institutions that so many communities have relied on for generations and also have fought for. And this is creating a lot of context of growing social discontent that populist right-wing voices are exploiting. And so I thought it was interesting and meaningful to speak to Guillaume about his perspectives on this particular political moment for Free City Radio.
We're in a very strange political moment in some ways, where populist political parties and leaders are capitalizing and mobilizing on some real anger in society around things like the housing crisis, this sort of sense of economic unfairness, broadly speaking, of corporate power going unchecked. When it comes to play, let's say, in the Canadian context with the Conservative Party, they're playing on this. And then also in Quebec, you have this dynamic for many years with the CAQ. So Guillaume, you are with IRIS. We're sitting in the office space here in Montreal. Maybe first, if you can just introduce yourself and share a little bit about this project, where we are now, and why your organization particularly has focused on trying to give some insights and sort of strategic research for social movements in relation to these sorts of points and why that's important right now. Thank you.
So my name is Guillaume Hébert. I'm a researcher at the Institut de Recherche et d'Information Socio-Économique, so IRIS. I've been here for 20 years already. At first, it wasn't even a paid job. We were all doing volunteer work, but with the years, we managed to find some financing, and so it became our job. So the easiest way to describe IRIS is to say that we are a left-wing think tank. So during the 90s and before, we had so many of these right-wing think tank active in the society that managed to make a lot of damage to the public policies, to bring the policies and the government, even the government itself, into the orbit of the corporate interests or the richest people of the society, their interests. So it was kind of a consensus that we needed some places, a research institute that would answer to give a response to these other think tanks. So this is the way that IRIS was created, and this is what we have been doing now for 25 years. So I like to say sometimes that my job is, or our job at IRIS is 51% research and 49% communication, because we do a lot of communication. So it's a difference between a think tank like us and a research institute in the academic world, for example. They don't have specific objective in terms of media communication, but for us it's fundamental. Our job is to take sometimes good ideas, interesting ideas that circulate into the academic world, put it in a format that can be understood in wider public. And then that's a big part of our job is this. So wrap a little bit what we're doing here at IRIS.
Mm-hmm. And we were exchanging recently in what I mentioned before, the context of sort of the populist politics and how that's playing out both in Quebec and Canada, and this very awkward situation where you have sort of language in a certain discourse that names inequality, that names the housing crisis. But I mean, when we get into the details, and I think this underlines the importance of a research institute to sort of like actually decode the policy.
Yes. And I don't like to say to use that much the term populist at this moment, because populist per se and historically is not necessarily something bad. It's something that could be almost compatible with left-wing movements. Mm-hmm. So in the first populists were in Russia in, I think, 19th century. And it was really what is common to all the populist movement we can observe, including in Latin America or in Europe, or in the United States also. It's a moment where there is a legitimate anti-establishment or frustration, colère populaire, that make the people want to make the society more democratic, actually. So that point is quite compatible with what we say and what we want normally on the left spectrum of the or the socialist tradition, let's say like this. And the problem is the extreme right and the demagogue in English movement right now we have, and that the very frightening part we have, and it has brought a change in our work, and it's a little more, let's say sometimes a little more complicated to debate with ideas in an era where it is much more difficult to have some rational debates. So when we started working in the year 2000, beginning of 2010, we still were in an era where you would be in the media in front of an economist from a big bank or a right-wing economist working in the universities, and the economists were the most influential people and respected people in the society. It was a bad thing, of course, but it was at certain point a debate on ideas. Now that sometimes it's different. So for our work also it's different, because we, a part of our job is to deconstruct discourse from some of our ideological adversaries. So if we cannot, or if the debate on ideas become more complicated, because you have a huge part of the population or who gets so distrustful of the institution, of all the institutions that
including public institutions,
totally. Yeah. It makes it much more difficult to do our job. Our job has to be a little more different. One of the things we've been doing right now is to consider that the institution, the neoliberal institution that we work to criticize for many years, we tend to say that Renault, they got really delegitimized. A lot of them became delegitimized. At some point, it can be dangerous, at which point they can be delegitimized, because sometimes it can be the whole idea of democracy that can be unpopular. So that's why our work turn a little bit more to be on the proposal, try to show what could be an alternative society instead of only getting to criticize what our adversaries try to propose as public policy. So we've did it in many sectors. One of our main big proposal is for healthcare in Quebec. So our six big solution for healthcare in Quebec, and quite radical one, because that's the interesting part of our times, is that the people are probably much more receptive to radical ideas than they have been in other times, where the anti-system, anti-establishment feeling were not that strong as they were today. Mm-hmm. So even criticizing capitalism is easier today than it was 15 years ago. I could not go on TV 15 years ago and criticize capitalism. It was not possible. Mm-hmm. If you do this, you're not credible anymore. We don't listen to you anymore. You're a joke. You're not a serious person. At 15 years ago, if you were criticizing capitalism, it's an illustration. Today, it's much more easier.
Yes.
It's different. So it's possible to bring a much more profound, let's say, reflection on our societies.
So in terms of that sort of mistrust in structures of power, and including public institutions, that can play out in very violent ways, and lead towards actually a possibility of actually radical transformation, or the exploitation of that critique towards the deconstruction of, you know, public institutions that actually emerged from social struggle originally, like public health care or public education, etc., as we're seeing in the United States. So for people listening to this broadcast in the rest of Canada, how is that playing out in Quebec?
So the tendencies are similar.
Yeah.
Maybe that we... In Quebec, the difference would be that we start from public services that are a little more, a little bigger, or we could say bigger. The size of the state in our economy is probably a little bigger than in the rest of Canada. It means also some public services sometimes that can be... La taille de l'État, la taille du secteur public dans l'économie peut être un peu plus grande au Québec. C'est une des particularités du Québec. Probablement même c'est pour ça que la crise économique de 2008-2009 avait frappé le Québec un peu moins fort que les États-Unis, évidemment, ou que le reste du Canada. Parce que les dépenses publiques se maintiennent quand il y a une crise économique.
Yeah.
C'est un effet contracyclique qu'on dit.
Yeah.
Quand il y a une récession... puis que le privé, les ménages diminuent les interventions, le public, lui, se maintient. Donc,
yeah.
Donc ça serait une des explications pourquoi le Québec, par exemple, a moins subi la crise de 2008-2009. Donc, au Québec...
So just for people who are hearing this, you're talking about how the economic crisis in 2008, there was a cushion, in a way, due to the size of the public sector in Quebec, and the economic crisis had less effects.
A counter-cyclical mechanism, let's say, much more than because even if we had that quite positive result, we haven't felt that much that crisis. The government in Quebec used that pretext to impose a drastic austerity after that crisis. Wow. It was totally unnecessary, but they did it. Many phases of austerity, which brought us around 2012, 2012, I think, 2017, 2012, we had surpluses of about $8 billion. So when we talk to our colleague in the rest of Canada, sometimes they cannot believe that we had these kinds of surpluses in our budget in Quebec, when every other provinces still get either deficit or maybe sometime get a balanced budget. So we had finally won. We were ready for the pandemic, let's say, because we had a lot of surplus that we collected during the year 2010. So that's why I would say that maybe in many areas the public sector and the state is bigger, a little bit bigger historically in Quebec, but it's exactly on the same tendencies than on the rest of the rest of Canada. And
how does that play out in relation to populist politics here today?
Honestly, I don't think the color of the political movement, let's say the cultural specificities, are going to be a little different. Because we're in Quebec, and because of French, because of different cultural aspect, but except from that, I think we observe some very similar tendencies from the rest of, for example, the debate on immigration. We have exactly the same in Canada or in Quebec, and we've seen that shift between government that were quite cautious because from strictly an economic point of view, for this government, they perceive the immigration from sometimes something positive, which it is, we believe. But now it's all, we've seen it in the rest, in Canada or in Quebec. Mm-hmm. Now the discourse is not only it's a thing that has to be controlled. And it's the explanation for almost any social or economic problem we have. Yeah. It's terrible. It's a joke. It's a real joke the way we have been pointing to immigration as any the source of any of our problems.
Like housing.
Yeah, totally housing. Yeah, the government finally admit there was a housing crisis in Quebec, which he refused to do during many years. But the only moment where he authorized itself to recognize that crisis is because he can say that's immigrant responsibility. That's because of the immigrant. So that's...
Well, and as a research institute, you know, you've made, I'm sure, done work to illustrate how that's not the case. I mean, Shawinigan is a prime example in terms of it having one of the lowest vacancy rates in all of Quebec, and also having one of the lowest amounts percentage-wise of immigrant communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It's a total. It's terrible. Yeah, when I was saying about these. We are in a strange time where sometimes the ideas or the debate with ideas seem to be more difficult than other moments. On immigration, it's terrible. It's almost a manufactured crisis, yeah. or it's at least the responsibility of the government is terrible on the housing aspect. They decided to let the private, the market, to solve, to allocate the resources. They let it go. They stop building social housing, community housing, which was necessary to maintain some kind of equilibrium. They totally abandoned that, and then we find ourselves in the situation we are right now. And they say it's because there's too many people coming. It's a It doesn't resist to any factual verification.
So, I mean, we were exchanging recently because of this situation that, you know, the Canadian state is in flux. So, of course, you know, we're talking at a time of Trump and the, you know, threats through tariffs, etc. But also we have this dynamic of the Conservative Party. You were involved in research and, you know, connected to social movements when Harper was in power. And I do think it's an important question to ask people in different sectors and in different spaces that are affected by the Canadian jurisdiction. That's what it comes down to. I really would like to know your opinion about how do we encounter, how do we engage with the sort of dynamics of a very real threat posed by the Conservative Party, in particular around and the sort of austerity-driven pro-corporate policy. If you even glance at their policy outline, it's shaped by these ideas.
Yes, totally. I've been talking about that difficulty to have debate on IDs. We could see a shift with the Harper government and the Conservative and Federal. And one of the big illustration or a politic or a decision that symbolized a lot of this was when they decided to cut the long formulary from Statistics Canada. It was terrible because you just cut the people from data that on which you have to build to have a political debate, some democratic debate. So it was for most of the people at first it doesn't mean a lot, but for the people trying to make these debates, the access to data is fundamental. It's a shortcut to obscurantism when you don't have access to public data, to numbers, to analyze what is happening around us. So
have
now,
accurate.
Absolutely, yeah. And now we have some other version of that with one of the few promises of now the Conservative Pierre Poilievre that want to cut the funding of CBC Radio Canada, want to cut the funding of the public broadcasting. So even if that public broadcaster add his own problem and neoliberal tendencies, when you start cutting on the places, any public places where you're supposed to have the means to have some democratic balanced debate, you are really getting into chaos and you're really sliding into a situation where you cannot even debate anymore. One of the few places worse than Canada about the public funding of public medias and these things is the United States, and I guess we can be afraid about getting into a situation where we would get much more polarized as we see in the United States and a society because when you cannot have when you we call it the echo chamber sometime when we talk about the social media in particular, but when you are not able to have a common base to debate a little bit when the other spectrum of the political landscape is you cannot, at a certain point you cannot debate with them at all because you're totally not in, you don't have any basis to debate, you're too far away and then you get into that what would Naomi Klein call the mirror world now? So some kind of place where the conspiracy theories, all kinds of conspiracy theories, are totally dominant, and where you cannot debate anymore. It's a strange place. It's hugely influential right now, and I think that to close democratic spaces. Can be public institution.
Yeah.
Can be a public broadcasting. Can be your statistical agency. Can be, of course, the schools, the access to education or health. When you close these spaces, you can find yourself in a society where it cannot debate anymore. And that from some kind of neutral point of view, then what you have is a society that have been quite damaged with neoliberal or hyper-capitalist, another term that I prefer sometimes. It's an hyper-capitalist society in public policies that we have been seeing now since the 80s. You got a lot of people who find that the society is not just, the people that are ready to don't trust anymore these institutions, rightly so. Their rage sometimes is totally understandable and totally legitimate. Totally legitimate. But it's, at this moment, it is all canalized,
funneled
through the right wing movement, right wing extreme right. Or hard right or movement, political parties, and that's terribly dangerous in my opinion. So, yeah.
Guillaume, thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem, you're welcome.
Thanks. That was a conversation with Guillaume Hibert of the Institut de Recherche et des Informations Socio-Economiques based in Quebec. That's the Institute of Research and Information and on Social and Economic Issues here in Quebec. It was really a pleasure to speak with Guillaume for the program Free City Radio. I'm Stéphane Christophe, and we broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays 11 a.m., on CJLO 1690 a.m., also in Montreal on Wednesdays at 8 a.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m., on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m., on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, British Columbia, Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto, on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., and on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also a podcast. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. I'm Stéphane Christophe, and thanks so much for tuning in.
Listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.